Exotic animals have been in the news a lot lately. Cecil the lion, his tragic death in Zimbabwe, a big cat sighting in Milwaukee, cougar sighting in Beloit, cougar sighting in northeast Wisconsin. So Wisconsin and I came to Rock Springs, an animal sanctuary. I want to thank Jeff Kozlowski for, tell us where we are, the formal name of it. Go ahead.
This is Wisconsin Big Cat Rescue and Educational Center. We currently house 28 big cats, 19 tigers, 5 lions, and 4 leopards. What we are is we're just a place where these cats can come live, and we give them a home to live out the rest of their lives with food, vet care, and...
So you're a nonprofit, Jeff?
Yep, yes we are.
How did you get into this? How long has this been open?
I've been rescuing cats since 2003. We've been in this facility since 2007 is when we built this facility, so...
And why did you get into the business of rescuing tracks? Or do you consider it a business, or is it a passionate love of yours, or what?
Well, now it's become a passionate love, and pretty much my life is what it is now. In the beginning, I was one of those that took pictures with cubs, you know. And in the beginning, yeah, it was great. You know, I think good money, which is why people do it. And then you realize that, you know, it's not great for the animals. It's not something that's good for them. So we decided to change what we were going to do and actually help these animals, you know, give them a home, a place to stay, and just to live out their life in peace.
So this opened when?
This opened in 08.
And how did your neighbors in Rock Springs, population 362, that's what the signs say, feel about dozens of big cats as their neighbors?
There was a lot of them that weren't pleased. They're more worried, which I guess if a guy's coming in with 20 big cats, lions and tigers, normally I guess there's a reason to be worried. And we understood that and tried to build the facility, you know, have them come in when our USDA agent was here doing inspections. If they had any concerns, we could address it, you know, and so the village would feel safe. Now, if you came in on 136 where the construction went, it says, "Welcome to Rock Springs, the village that roars."
Yeah, so that's a slogan for Rock Springs.
Yep.
So it's come a long way.
Yep.
Well, you're not a vet. Do you have a special training in these cats, or just practical learning over the last few?
It's learning over the last years, and a gentleman up north had big cats, worked with him, and it's just learn, and you hope it's not by error. It's just trial, you know. There's never anybody that's going to say they're an expert, because there's always something else you can learn, because it's a wild animal. It's never domesticated, can never be domesticated. So you just have to respect the animal that it is.
And what's your census count now? How many animals do you have?
28.
And they break down how in terms of lions and tigers 19, and leopards?
19 tigers, 5 lions, and 4 leopards.
4 leopards.
Yep.
Are you maxed out here?
We are here. We have room for a lesser cat, servo, bobcat, something like that. We have other space. Unfortunately, on the other side of that tree line, there's another 80 acres. And they're willing to sell 40, and we've been asked to expand, if we would expand, taking more cats, because right now there's states that are passing laws and there's a lot of cats that are going to need homes. So, but I'm not going to build any more cages till I know financially I can care for all the animals I have.
Now, you have a nonprofit, but is it, yep, is it profitable? Are you able to pay the bills? I mean, the financial future?
Yep, we're able to pay the bills, keep the cats fed, and the vet care that we're in.
And how many visitors do you get in a year, estimate?
It varies. Road closures don't help like this year, but, you know, we could have around 10,000, you know, 15,000 people. And that isn't counting our Halloween event that brings 7,000 in 6 hours, so.
What do people need to know about these big cats? Because they have been in the news lately. How do you feel about the tragic loss of Cecil in Zimbabwe? Trophy hunting.
I'm for hunting. Deer hunting, if you're going to eat it. The trophy hunting, I don't think that an African lion is something that you should hunt. And where these guys go hunting really is not hunting. You know, a lot of them, and, you know, and there's big game hunting in the United States where, yeah, you can hunt lions, and you don't have to go to Africa. But all it is some cats that were born in cages, put in big areas, so they have no fright of human, you know, so you're really not hunting. And who would want to kill a lion or a tiger or anything like that? It's just...
Why do people, how widespread is it that people buy these pet lions and tigers and then raise them until they can no longer raise them, and then they often end up in facilities like yours and in sanctuaries like yours, right?
Yep.
So why do people, I don't understand it. Help me understand why somebody would order. Can you order?
You can get.
A baby lion, a baby tiger?
Yep.
Where does somebody go to get that? And how much do they pay?
Unfortunately, you get these picture taken places and everything, which can only use them from up to 4 months of age.
Okay.
So now after...
Birth to four? After 4 months? Excuse me for interrupting.
Actually, it's only, I think it's like 12 weeks you can start, because anything before that, they're real susceptible to bacterial infections, people touching them.
Yep.
But a lot of them use them before that point anyway. But then by the federal law, USDA law, you can only use them for direct contact net up to 4 months. Then you can't anymore. Unfortunately, these cats live 15 to 20 years in captivity, so now the cat is no longer going to make you money like you had planned when you were doing the pictures. Now it's going to cost you vet care, food care for the next 15 years of 20 years of its life.
Right.
So a lot of them, you'll find a lot of 5-month-old cubs, 6-month-old cubs looking for a good home, or $500, or a lot of these cubs are born and you can purchase them for around $1,000 to $1,500.
Are they on Craigslist, or is there a black market, or how does that work?
There's really not a black market, because it's not illegal in certain states to breed and sell them, and this state is one of them. So you can go on, you know, they have what they call an animal's finder's guide. If you were to get a hold of one of those and look, you would be surprised what you can buy. You can buy anything from a kangaroo to a tiger to, I've seen giraffes in there in a book.
What does it cost? What's the name of this very regal looking lion behind
relaxed
us?
Relaxed.
Relaxed. <Yeah. laughs> Regally relaxed lion behind us.
That's Bam Bam.
Bam Bam.
Yeah.
What's your estimate? How much does it cost to vet, feed, house Bam Bam for a year?
We estimate around 5,000 a year.
About 5,000 a year.
5,000 a year.
So the budget out here is about what?
Probably around 100, I'd say 140,000, 120,000, just for food and vet care.
And we were talking about you have rescued animals from some squalid conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the source of most of your animals? I mean, people just, you said one was up to its chest, mm-hmm. and feces and mud and stuff.
Yep.
Is that the source of where you get most of your animals,
sir? It's a lot of places where we get, and you know, we get calls every year for animals, you know, and you don't have the space. And unfortunately, all the good sanctuaries are full. There is a lot. 2 years ago, we got a call for 33 tigers, I think it was. And unfortunately, a place in Arkansas took them, gave them good homes. But you get those calls often, 6 tigers, 30 tigers. So now, unfortunately, you take in 33 tigers, say there's 10 females and they were breeders, and you can have 1 to 6 cubs. Your number went from 30 to 60 quick.
Yes.
So and you never know what you're getting. A lot of times you're getting a lot of vet bills. Because we feed our cats approximately 15 to 20 pounds a day.
A day?
Beef, chicken, and that mixture. They get vitamins. There's actually vitamins called Wild Tracks we use. When they're smaller, they need to get plenty of calcium supplements and all that. You know, they get vaccinated for the same shots that your cat would get, your regular house cat. And we provide all that. Now, a lot of places don't do that. They're not going to pay to get the shots. And a lot of them say, oh, we do it ourselves, which means it probably didn't happen. They don't probably do. We do get cats from zoos that just, like up in Wilson, Wisconsin, we got 6 animals from. She just couldn't do anymore. So you get these smaller zoos. You have the AZA-accredited zoos, then you have the other zoos.
Okay.
An AZA-accredited zoo will not take these animals. Because unless these animals came from another AZA-accredited zoo, they won't take them. So unfortunately, I'm willing to bet that there's more un-AZA-accredited zoos than there are.
Well, does that go back to what you said? You used the term good sanctuaries.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you define a good sanctuary from a bad sanctuary? And how can somebody who wants to visit a facility like this know whether it's a good or bad one?
Well, you can check up, you know, a good sanctuary is they don't breed. They don't have direct contact with the animals. You know, there's no picture taking. No, we don't make these animals do anything that they don't naturally do every day.
Okay.
It's more like you're coming to see them in their home, their habitat, where they're at. You know, and I've always said, I wish I didn't have to do this. I wish every cat there was in the wild. You know, it's not something I hope that, you know, there's animals to take in all the time. But unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of them for probably a long time to come.
And it sounds like, tragically, that's growing, animals that are mistreated. I'm just, and the reason I say that is going back to, you got a call, could you take 33 tigers?
Nope, not at this point. I mean, like I said, there's property next door where we could purchase the land, you know, build more cages, but that all takes time and a lot of funding.
Okay.
You know, and we do have a lot of supporters and a lot of people out there, you know, so we can do it, but there's just, you know, once you're looking at making laws and that, you have to make sure that you're ready for where these cats have to go.
Well, okay, you know? Let's talk about the animal that was seen in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your perspective on that is that's not a lion. But anyway, just watching the news coverage, knowing what you know, what was loose in Milwaukee, do you think?
I think it was just a cougar.
A cougar?
Based on what? Based on, it was a larger cat, but I base it on is if it was somebody's pet, like some people have said. All these animals here, none of them are my pets. I've taken in, they never make good pets. However, when you have an animal that you've raised in a cage all its life, that someone probably had from a cub, you're around it all the time. It's around people all the time. They have no natural fear of a human being.
If they're raised as a pet.
Right. Like, okay. So if you went out in the wild and there was tigers there, they're probably just going to stay away from you. Same thing with a cougar. You don't see a lot of cougars. There's reasons for that because they try to stay away from people. But unfortunately, if it's somebody's, they're used to people. They don't have that fear of people. So if they had, I think it was a 4-block area, you know, quarantined off where they thought that it was last seen and they had it, but it got by.
Yep.
If it was someone's pet, they would have seen it. This cat was a lot more elusive than somebody's, because like Pebbles, the animal that was in here before and that the other news station got coverage on. Mm-hmm. I guarantee if you had her surrounded in a 4-block, you're going to see her. There's no way she's going to get by you. She's just, they're used to people. If humans have raised them, they're used to humans, just like anything a human's raised.
Okay. Your largest animal here would weigh how many pounds?
Probably around 6 to 650 pounds.
Okay. And he would never get out, right? In other words, he would be in this pen and then you'd put him in a holding zone while you cleaned and then fed. So just walk me through the day and the life of a big cat like one behind us.
Well, usually in the morning, we always feed in the morning. So what we do is we prep all their meat the night before, put their vitamins on it and everything, keep it up where we do our meat prep, and then we bring it down. We lock each animal is out of their lockout cages. We have a door.
Mm-hmm.
So then we put their food in their lockout cage, close, lock the cage back up, and then we have a door that we pull opens up.
Yep.
Then they come in and eat, and we never have any problem with them coming in there. Everybody says, do they always go in there at feeding time? They're always in there. Then we close the door, lock them down, and then we can go in their habitat and enclosure and do all the cleaning we want. We'll put different things in there, like for enrichment. We'll put different scents, move things around. We have these big balls that we move in different cages.
Yes.
Anything that stimulates their mind so they're not doing the same thing over and over.
And so when one of your visitors says, well, I can't see the animals because of the brush, there's a reason for that, right?
Yeah, we actually replant a clover pasture mix here. A lot of seed. I don't just put a couple seeds in the cage, and I purposely do it so all the brush, weeds, trees, whatever you want to call it, grows up thick. So it's kind of like their natural habitat. I mean, you can, in most of the enclosures, you can see the animals. You know, they have concrete hutches, and the reason they have those is because they're cool. In the summer, you can go in there, and there's a 20 to 30 degree difference inside their hutches that we have. In the winter, we put straw in there. They stay nice and warm. So we try to make them as comfortable as possible for them.
Well, with all the news, you must see this as kind of a teachable moment, right, on the issue of exotic pets. So every so often you're going to have an animal sighting in Milwaukee and a Cecil in Zimbabwe. And so there's going to be interest. So this interest, people should understand what about these animals? In other words, is this a teachable moment for somebody like you running a nonprofit sanctuary?
It is, because I said, but when we get people here, we want to let them know, you know, that to see them kind of as naturals. When they ask us, are we going to see them all? We can't guarantee it. We cannot. The animal's going to do what it does. We're not. So we look at, you know, people, you know, we can let them know they're not pets. And if probably thousands of times a summer we hear, oh, I'd love to have one of those as pets. And we see that as a teachable moment.
And you say what?
We let them know, no, you wouldn't. There's no way you'd like to have this as a pet. And understandably, when they're born, they're 3 pounds, around 3 pounds.
Yep.
You know, they bottle fed. They're cute. They're cuddly. In a year, they can kill you at a year old, without a doubt, you know. And these animals playing can kill you at full grown. It's the animal is what it is. It is a lion. It is a tiger. We want people to know that these cats you see here, they're used to me and my wife around. So they react to us as that.
Yep.
We don't go in them cages and roll around with them. You know, we give them attention through or outside the cage. Nobody else is allowed to touch these animals. Our interns that come here are not allowed to touch them. We're the only ones. And, you know, so we want people to know that what you're seeing is a lion or tiger.
Is there the number of bad sanctuaries, the ones that mistreat animals, is that a trend that's growing nationally? Because you sound like you're really frustrated at those bad sanctuaries having had to rescue quite a few of your cats from them.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of sanctuaries. My sanctuary is built for the animals. That's why I built it. We don't have fancy pools. We want to make the animals comfortable. Unfortunately, you'll go to some places, you know, have really small cages. They have no grass in the cages. It's muddy. It's not clean all the time. You know, they're not getting the proper food. You know, so that it bothers me when you see that. And unfortunately, I'm sure most of these places, they mean well. You know, in their heart, that's what they want to do. They want to think they're rescuing the animal. But that's why I don't just take a bunch of animals. You know, I've been told I can cut my cages in half or quarter them and still be bigger than a lot of their cages. But that's not what I feel that animal needs, so I'm not willing to do it.
Well, now let's talk about laws. What are there federal laws that dictate how these animals can be held and must be treated and the standard for their living conditions? First, let's talk federally. In other words, who comes in here and inspects your animals? The USDA?
Yep.
Okay. So is there a set of federal laws that governs how these big cats must be treated?
Yes. There is a set of federal laws under one condition. You're open to the public.
Really?
However, if you are not, say I closed these gates and didn't let no one in here anymore.
Just private.
The federal government cannot come in my facility. They cannot regulate it. So I technically, and this goes back again to no state laws, I can technically put chicken wire up in here, put big cats in it, and nobody can say a word to me. Nobody.
That's a federal standard.
The federal standard is if you're open to the public. That is the only time the federal people investigate. You're not, and say they were in horrible conditions, you know, let's say not the safety, you know, they can't say what they have to be in, but say they were being mistreated, weren't being fed right, then they could step in. But if I wasn't open to the public, the standard of my cages, I could drop. Any size, made out of anything, and because they don't regulate that, because we're not open, wouldn't be open to the public.
Is there a national trade association for animal sanctuaries, Jeff?
There is. There's the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries out there. And the International Foundation of Animal Welfare paid us a visit a couple years ago, asking if we wanted to expand, because they're obviously looking for places to start putting animals.
Right.
By her visit, she looked like she enjoyed the facility, wanted to know if I was interested, and wanted us to join the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. But I've found in this business there's groups that like to stick together and groups that like to have wars with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be in those groups. I want to do what we do here. We invite anybody. PETA, Humane Society, I think they've all been in here. And we'll show them anything they want to see. We have no problems with that. You know, but I really don't want to pay a fee to someone else to run and do. And most of them have said we could easily make, you know. And I understand the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries wants to help everybody out. And it might be something good for us, and at a time I probably will join it. But, you know, I just like to try to get stable and do what I'm doing on my own now.
Now, you have been active in the Capitol. There's been different bills offered to write a set of state rules. And now in the wake of the Cecil and the Milwaukee, State Senator Van Wongard is going to sponsor a new set of state, a proposed state law on the issue. if you were drafting that law or testifying before a legislative committee, what should be in any Wisconsin law? Because right now, Wisconsin doesn't have a law on exotic pets.
Nope, they have none.
Okay, now you've testified in the past on this issue. Mm-hmm. If you were testifying now, what should be in that law, sir?
First of all, there should all your animals should be registered with your county authorities, state authorities. Anything you have should be registered. Every animal you have should have a photograph of it. Because unfortunately, say I was to have a four-month-old tiger cub, and it suddenly got out and ran away. And I found out, let's say, that it was out.
Four-month-old tiger cub. Okay.
And like I said, I'm not going to tell somebody, hey, my tiger's running loose. Nobody's going to do it, you know. Obviously, if we had someone out here, I'm calling the authorities because I want. But I could turn around, go get another four-month-old tiger, put it in the same cage, so when they came and looked, I have the same tiger. The only way you can tell, you can microchip, which is a lot.
Are any of these animals microchip?
Nope, nobody microchip. Okay. If you take a picture of a tiger, they all have different stripes. If you have a picture of that animal, especially a tiger, you can tell. You can say what you want, but their stripes aren't going to be the same on any of the cats. And you can do microchipping. They should have standards on your cage sizes. USDA has cage size standards, but I really think, in my view, that it should be larger. You should have proof of insurance on these animals.
How much is your insurance bill a year here?
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Okay. Excuse me. Go ahead.
You should have proof of vet care, that your animals are getting the care they need. Whatever you feed. With USDA now, USDA requires we tell them what these animals gets fed, the vitamins used, and everything. The state should have all that. You got the thing where, I think that all direct contact with these large cats should be avoided. There's no reason for it. You could say, it's a learning tool. What are you learning? That you can pet a tiger? And where in your lifetime are you going to use that? You're going to go to India or Africa and try to pet a lion or a tiger? The ending in that isn't going to be, you can learn about the cats, from here in any zoo, you can learn about the cats, see them, people say, I think that the breeding and selling should be gone. Breeding, if you're a zoo and you want to breed your animals and keep them at your zoo where you have room for them, I don't see a problem with that. Other people do. But if you're a zoo, I think as far as people saying, we're trying conservation, that is what the AZA zoos are doing. They have their genetic pool. They have all these lists. They're taking animals and breeding them there. Mm-hmm. So people can't say, they're just going to be gone, because AZA zoos just aren't going to be here anymore. They are doing the breeding. They're going to keep these animals for everybody's children and grandchildren to see. But, if you want to breed in your facility in your zoo, I don't see a problem with that. But you must keep it at your facility.
So you've just outlined what you'd like to see in a state law, starting with anybody that owns exotic pets would have to tell who? The local government? The state government? Who?
I'd go with your city or town you live in.
Okay.
And your
village.
County.
Okay. And your county.
And your state.
And what animals should they have to register? Should it be all lions, all tigers, all cougars, what?
It should be any wild, dangerous animal that they have. And there's a lot of them. I've seen tons of lists up there. Some of the lists I've seen bats on. I don't understand the bat thing. But, sometimes you just take it too far, and that's the reason a lot of laws don't go.
Okay.
And the other thing is they have to watch, if they're a responsible owner and you're asking a specific cage size, don't put it at 2 square miles. You got to understand that there is responsible owners that have these animals and are taking care of them if they have them. I try to get everybody the benefit of the doubt that has them. So what you don't want to do is the bills in this business are high enough.
Yes.
And to make them get something that's just outrageous, that really isn't needed, just so you can try to make them have to get rid of their animals.
Well, you've lobbied before in the Capitol on some type of a state law like we've been talking about. What's the problem getting it passed? Is there opposition to it? And if so, where's the opposition come from?
I don't know what the opposition would be. Other than it makes people money, I can't. Because the last
is
one...
Is the picture taking the only thing that makes people money?
You can open a zoo and have people come in, but it's it's safe for the animals, it's safe for the community, but right. You know, the state can put regulations on that zoo other than what USDA puts. You know, of course the state's looking out as public safety. I look out a lot for the health and care of the animals. You got an animal in the cage and people are coming to view it and you want them to learn things about it, you mm-hmm. know, make sure the animal's comfortable and everything. But then, you know, the state and the local governments have to know where these animals are. Because
okay. And they don't now.
No.
Well, one thing that intrigues me in this debate, Jeff, is it seems to me, and this is a question, are there a lot more pet lions, tigers, and other exotic animals that people have on their private properties? How widespread is that in Wisconsin?
I think it's a lot more widespread than they think. There's places that had lions that I didn't know about until I got this, you know, had this, and, you know, a lot of the animals have long since passed away, but they don't know because the number changes at these places. They don't have anything registered. They don't know. They don't have nobody going to the places to see if they still got that amount, you know, of cats. So
it's a fairly widespread practice in Wisconsin for private people to have these exotic pets?
As far as, you know, people in their house sitting on their couch, I don't think there's a lot.
Right.
But you'd fear. But unfortunately, in this state, you have a lot of small farms.
Yes.
Out in the middle of nowhere, there's a lot of, you know, forest area.
Yes.
And people have property, and you have no idea. You don't have any idea what's there.
And how often do you get calls from these private individuals, not the zoos, saying, my tiger's now 6 months, can you take him? You often get those calls?
We get calls like that. We had an African serval that a guy, and that's just a lesser cat, only gets 35 pounds, but it's still a wild cat, 40 pounds. But this guy took great care of this animal. It was in great health. He had had it in his house for 11 years. But finally he realized, you know, he was at our facility and wanted her to be put here. It's where, because she didn't belong in the house, and he realized she didn't belong in the. And, you know, there's been things like the, I don't know if you heard, the tiger in New York, where it was in that building. I don't know how anybody could keep a tiger in an apartment that long. With no of the neighbors, they said smells, but I don't know how it didn't eat through the walls, you know. Because that stuff can happen. And that just shows you, if it can happen in New York and nobody can know that tiger was in there,
right.
It obviously can happen, you know, anywhere.
So what did you tell the person who wanted to put his or her 11-year-old animal here at your sanctuary?
We told him, give us 2 weeks. We built an enclosure for it. And then he brought her here.
Okay.
You know, so it's rough on them. It's rough on the owners, but for them to see.
Yes.
You know.
But that owner then isn't giving you any money to care for his or her animal, are they?
No.
No, they're okay. So it's all just becomes part of your budget.
Yep.
So are you a pretty fragile financial nonprofit?
We get that. You know, the simplest thing, like they're working on a highway and cars yeah. weren't able to get here, so. This year we'll struggle. We have our huge fundraiser this Saturday, and we look at that, and in our Halloween event, you know, that gets us through the winter. Okay. We get what by. You know, I do some tree work on the side. My wife works at Land's End in the winter, so we got to do to get by. So.
More than 10 years later, where is the joy and satisfaction in running a nonprofit sanctuary for large 600-pound lions?
It's pretty much getting up every day and see that the animals appreciate it. And, you know, people that come to the sanctuary, when they tell you, oh, this place is wonderful, we love it. You know, the cats look so happy. Our animals don't pace. You won't see them. We give them enrichment. We try to give them what they need to have a happy life. So that has pretty much come. Like, once I decided to do this, this is my life. I can't tomorrow decide I'm going to go work at McDonald's or somewhere. Because, unfortunately, I have 28
animals.
And I can't take them to the local humane society and say, I'm going to surrender my animals.
Right.
So.
The other side of that is, what's your biggest frustration?
My biggest frustration is that people keep breeding more and people keep getting more. And like I said, if you want to breed your own animals and keep them, I don't have a problem with that. But when people breed and then say, oh, we no longer have room at our zoo, well, then just don't breed in the first place. Because we had animals here when we did the rescue from Indiana that had cubs. So mm-hmm. we had cubs here in Abating. After they had cubs, we were told by the USDA that there is a birth control you can use. So we tried. Anything you can avoid surgery on these animals, it's the best thing for them. Didn't work.
Okay.
So now all our animals are neutered
okay.
or spayed, so they don't have any more animals here. Because like I said, they could have one cub, they could have six cubs. and you just don't want that for the cat.
Talk about the security procedures. Does your fence have to be X number of feet high, and it has to be able to withstand X number of pounds per square inch? Because these are powerful animals.
Yep, they have, USDA actually has their standards, and the standard B, that the cage is built to keep that animal within it. Height size, they just raise their height. We're up to their height.
That fence is how high?
That's almost 16 feet high.
16 feet high. Okay.
So what we did was, when we built this facility, we went by USDA and went above and beyond. I think at that time their perimeter fence was 6 or 8 feet. We went 10 feet with two strands of bars, so we were at like 12 or 14 feet.
That's pretty expensive fencing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And that fencing we had made in Iowa, that did testing on it, and I think it was 100 and some thousand pounds per square inch tensile strength. You know, that pipe is 5-inch galvanized pipe pounded 6 feet in the ground. None of them cats are ever coming through that fence. And that's just what we wanted, because like you said, we came to this village and they were worried. So we wanted them to know that it's safe. These cats aren't getting out. You know, people can say, I guarantee a cat will never get out. Everybody makes mistakes. Unfortunately, the only way our cat's getting out is if we open that door and leave it open. But with the way we have our procedures, there's a check and then a double check, and then I come around check. So,
is that your greatest fear, that a cat gets loose?
In this business, yes, it is. It's, you know, I hope it never happens, and we do everything we can here to make sure it never happens. You know, we've been questions with, well, what if somebody cuts the perimeter fence, cuts this fence?
You worry about that?
I don't up here. We have surveillance cameras. We have cameras places that people don't know there's cameras for that reason. You know, so if they did it, it's on camera. You know, unfortunately, I can't have an armed guard stand around here all night and watch, but our cameras see it. You know, there's motion things on it that set off. So if you cut your way in my perimeter and cut that cat's cage, unfortunately, he's going to be right there.
Why would I ever do that?
It doesn't. Unfortunately, are you willing to make that last cut to that cage?
No.
And it's, unfortunately, if someone does that, it's probably not going to end up good, you know.
Right.
But the good thing about here is if a cat gets out here, the perimeter around here is about half a mile around.
Self-enclosed?
There's space in. So most likely it's going to be in here. There's going to be a commotion, which is going to set off the cameras. We'll come down here. I do have dart guns and what I need to put the cat down. As you've seen, if I come up to the cage, the cats are going to come up, which is going to make it an easy dart for me. Then you let him be, he'll go down, and then we'll be able to come in.
Okay.
The odds of the cat getting out of the front, if we leave the gate open, he's inside this area. And then as far as leaving the gate open while people are here, that would never happen with the way we do things. It just three people would have to leave the gate open.
Maybe two final questions. Part of your mission is a learning center. So you talked about interns.
Mm-hmm.
So where do your interns come from? Different colleges?
Yep.
Majoring in what?
Usually veterinarian,
zoology.
You know, so they get not the hands-on touching, but the actual everything that you're going to need to know if you're going to work in a zoo. As far as our educational center behind us here, it's in progress to be built and done.
Okay.
So we can do our vet work here. Vet students from UW-Madison can, you know, participate with my vet because he's allowed them, students from different vets, to draw blood, help neuter a 600-pound tiger. So,
have you got a special vet?
Mike Etter out of Lodi Vet Hospital is our vet. And when we first got him, you know, he worked with Lori Gage, who's a big cat specialist for USDA.
Yeah.
And asked her all the questions he needed to ask. And he's pretty comfortable up here now. Out here, when he comes out here, there's a big from when it was before.
Okay.
Well, unfortunately, he's the most unlike person by these cats.
Oh, yeah. Because of the procedures that he puts them through.
And they have to get their vaccinations every 3 years. So.
Okay. Well, if Senator Van Wongaard's bill gets a hearing and you're asked to testify, give us a short version of what you're going to say in terms of why there's a state law needed.
Because as of right now, there's no state laws, and they have no idea where these big cats are. If these cats, people were to have them as pets, and like I told you, not be open to the public, there is no regulation. So they need to know that if someone got a tiger, they could go to Menards, buy a dog kennel, and put that tiger in it, and there's no regulating it. You know, your cities will have some kind of exotic pet law. Some counties will. I'm willing to bet that a lot don't. So if the
cities and counties in Wisconsin have them?
Some will.
Okay, some will. Excuse me.
Sauk County has them, mainly because that's where I came.
Facility, yeah.
Columbia County got them.
Okay.
So it's just the state needs to do something, because I think as of now, last I heard, West Virginia did do something. So as of now, I think we're the only state that has none.
Wow.
Nothing. So
okay.
There needs to be something done.
Jeff, thanks a lot for having Wisconsin and I come out. And if you're in the Capitol testifying, Wisconsin and I will cover you. So maybe we'll see you
then. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yep.